You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, or 88.1 W201CD Ithaca Community Radio. We continue with The Fire This Time, a documentary on the destruction of Iraq.
Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down.
We're like the bullies of the world right now, you know that?
And the voice of the harpers shall be heard no more at all in thee.
Throwing the pistol at the sheepherder's feet.
And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee.
Pick it up.
This is CBS.
This is PBS.
This is ABC.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Good evening. The United States of America is at war.
Pick up the gun.
To begin with, the army occupying Kuwait would hardly be touched. Instead, targets all over Iraq would be obliterated.
Imagine Iraq like a human body. What happens if you sever their spinal cord? They can't function, right?
Tomahawk cruise missile, F-14 Tomcats, devastating JP-233 bombs targeted the most intense aerial bombardment the world has ever known. American B-52s flying high above the reach of Iraqi fire.
Casualties on the Iraqi side will be extremely high.
Saddam Hussein must be seen to be the loser.
This was tremendous. Baghdad was lit up like a Christmas tree.
1,300 sorties so far.
The first airstrikes were probing, testing the efficiency of Baghdad's defenses. On Friday, the tactics changed to heavy saturation bombing.
First 24 hours consisted of more attacks than the entire number of targets in the years 1942 and 1943 during the combined bomber offensive in Europe.
6 minutes after the stealth bombers left, the cruise missiles arrived. Others dropped carbon filament to short the electrical grid system.
American, British and Saudi bombers and fighters from air bases and carriers joined in a single concerted attack.
There's another wave of bombing just starting. This is the first time anybody's seen a war like this.
Britain still hasn't formally declared war on Iraq. Apparently the Foreign Office nowadays considers it a bit old-fashioned.
Mr. Ambassador, you have virtually the entire world community ranged against you.
It is an American game.
At this point, I'm not willing to put my goggles on looking at TV screens. I gave the code word KISSUM.
Mr. Ambassador, we bid you good morning.
KISSUM.
AWACS planes, packed with computer equipment, helped control the battle.
I sweat my gun.
Iraqi soldiers ran through the crosshairs.
Vietnam is a ghost of
terror. Gradually, they are being starved, quite apart from the aerial bombardment.
Daybreak saw no let up. New targets were sought out. Some of those not destroyed overnight returned to.
Allied aircraft have now flown a total of 4,000 sorties.
Many people are dying at the moment, Mr. Ambassador.
67 hit records have been banned by the BBC for reasons of sensitivity. Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight, Boom Bang a Bang by Lulu, and Cat Stevens, I'm Gonna Get Me a Gun. Yet the record most requested by our boys in the Gulf is Barry Maguire's The Needle of Destruction.
What we cannot be proud of, Mr. Speaker, is the unshaven, shaggy hair, drug culture, poor excuses for Americans wearing their tiny, round, wire-rimmed glasses, a protester symbol of the Blame America First crowd out in front of the White House burning the American flag.
But the main development in the war is tonight's Scud missile attack on Israel.
Saddam Hussein has now twice sent extremely dangerous weapons into the middle of a built-up area.
Most intense air attack since the Second World War.
Has now twice.
The system dispenses hundreds of tiny bomblets.
Has now twice.
Allied planes have
been over 8,000 sorties.
Has now twice.
Attacks on Baghdad, Tikrit, Samawa, Nasiriya and Basra.
The electricity has gone off everywhere in the whole city. There's no water, no telephone, no communication for anybody.
Military briefings have emphasized the threat still posed by Iraq's Scud missiles.
2,000 sorties a day.
Scud targets, Scud launchers,
Scud launching sites, Scud missile attacks.
Scud missiles,
Scud rockets,
Scud
rockets,
Scud sites, Scud, 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 Scud sites, Scud rockets. No one has yet been killed in these Scud missile attacks. They're extremely inaccurate. Search for Scuds.
Three Scud missile launchers.
Scud targets.
saying that Scuds are a danger to your nation is like saying that lightning is a danger to your nation.
Massive aerial bombardment.
Terms of concentrated firepower, so that the war
gave him the chemical
military machines.
The West seems to be
a divergence between what the UN appears to be saying on paper and what the Allies are now saying in one form or another in reality.
Security can scarcely be restored to this area with anything like the Iraqi war machine in the condition we saw it in the last few years.
Except if he withdraws from Kuwait and then says, "I've withdrawn, that's it, you've done what you wanted, I'm out."
I think that option has now virtually been exhausted.
Our goal remains the same, to liberate Kuwait.
This man has to comply with these resolutions without equivocation.
MPs won't be able to vote for an amendment supporting a ceasefire.
Direct hit on two blocks of flats in Baghdad.
Most of the civilian damage has been caused by Iraq's own air defense missiles, which went astray.
Television has done a beautiful job of demonstration of the high tech the Arabs will be buying in the next few years.
As if incredibly accurate bombs and missiles don't do the same things to human beings as old-fashioned ones.
And F-16 has taken off with full weapons load.
At the rate of one every 90 seconds.
I think it's really going well.
If I had to say something bad, I'd say I wish the weather'd be a little bit nicer right now.
The 52s had already begun to form well-protected positions of the elite Republican Guard
are being stepped up. 3,000 Allied soldiers.
B-52 bombers dropped their bombs 30 tons at a time in a 3-mile-long strip.
The effect of this on the Iraqi army is difficult to determine.
The Allies are anxious. No one should be under the illusion that this will be an easy war to win.
They kept talking about the elite Republican Guard in these hushed tones, like these guys were the bogeyman or something.
Yeah, we're doing well now, but we have yet to face the elite Republican Guard.
Like these guys were 12 feet tall desert warriors. Yeah, well, after 2 months of continuous carpet bombing and not one reaction at all from them, they became simply the Republican Guard. Not nearly as elite as we may have led you to believe. Bombing, they went from the elite Republican Guard to the Republican Guard to the Republicans made this shit up about there being guards out there.
Isn't in some respects the right of people to demonstrate in this way the right that they're fighting for in the Gulf?
Well, certainly not. That's a very confused statement of people's rights. They take the time of the police, the so-called demonstrators, and I don't know why people should feel the need to do this, because it is not gaining any political advantage. It is causing a great deal of inconvenience, and it's a purpose act.
What is needed now is a clear lead to the nation in prayer.
B-52 bombers will launch raids against Iraq from Fairford in Gloucestershire because Middle East bases are too crowded.
The Allied planes are returning time and time again, selecting new targets and finishing off old ones.
2,600 sorties to
American B-52 targeting areas just 5 miles from the heart of the city, destroying the main power station.
You're not seriously suggesting that such a building could be targeted, and that really is why I'm saying.
The attacks are having a devastating effect. Day by day, more and more of Baghdad's infrastructure is being reduced to rubble.
It was a petrochemical plant. Power stations and energy producing facilities are being steadily obliterated.
My SINTAF commander has now claimed air supremacy.
They are using high-altitude bombing, and most of the civilians are paying the price.
Because of maybe some of the bombs which happened were not targeting innocent civilians. We're not going to go in there and kill a lot of civilians.
The officials in the Western government are not telling the
truth. Every night since the war began, Baghdad has been attacked at least once, and sometimes as many as 4 times.
We also attacked power plants. One fourth of Iraq's electrical generating facilities are completely inoperative, and another 50% suffered degraded operation.
Prime Minister John Major has rejected calls for negotiations.
Cut off from regular food and water supplies as the Allied bombs began in mid-January.
We're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
Hydroelectric installation in Iraq being bombed by the Americans.
We're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
A factory producing milk for children, that was also attacked.
We're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
The Allies are including a number of food storage and processing plants in their strategic objectives. Inside a destroyed flour mill outside Baghdad, the ruins of a potato warehouse.
We're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
Allied strike planes have hit oil pumping stations.
We're doing our best to abide by
by the Geneva Convention.
More than a third of Iraq's communications network has gone.
And we're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
The Allied determination to destroy Iraq's refining capacity.
4,000 shots. All nuclear reactors have been destroyed.
And we're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
The total oil spillage into the Gulf from attacks on offshore platforms could be 8 times that spilled from the Exxon Valdez.
And we're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
In the city center, the sound was deafening. Two bridges across the Tigris took direct hits.
We're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
The impact on civilians caught by the bombing is all too evident.
I am annoyed at the propaganda coming out of Baghdad about targeting civilians. This has been fantastically accurate.
Iraq's infrastructure has been bombed again and again.
We're doing our best to abide by the Geneva Convention.
57,000 soldiers.
The Sportstaff has accepted that Allied bombing may be causing civilian casualties.
We have convinced it up now, but that brown
out of absolute precision is impossible to achieve.
They can now move on.
Allied air forces reaching 59,000.
Without power and fuel, life-saving incubators are useless.
Exit phones are reality.
We have convinced it up now, but that brown
out of absolute precision is impossible. Nor do we seek to punish the Iraqi people for the decisions and policies of their leaders.
That have been falling into some civilian areas of
Basra. The Allied strategy to bombard and cripple the nation is close to completion.
I'm now going to show you a picture of the luckiest man in Iraq. Keep your eye on the crosshairs. Right there. Right through the crosshairs. And now in his rearview mirror.
By the Allies to the press.
Government leaders around the world are following the course of the war on television.
Where does the news come from?
The pool system here is being manipulated and deliberately misused by the military authorities to stifle information.
Operational facts have been omitted for reasons of military security.
Subject to clearance by the military authorities.
Correspondents who visit the front on their own have been warned that they risk being shot by the Allies.
Operation Desert Storm continues on track.
In the crowded air raid shelters, people try to make sense of the
coalition superiority was overwhelming, but the airmen were running out of targets.
Late in January, we came to the lower part of the list. It wasn't high priority, the bunker in the Al-Fridis area of Baghdad.
So this was a two-weapon salvo. This is not a video game.
See where the blast and the fire had been, and they were pulling bodies out.
The bunker was a public air raid shelter.
On top of the water, there was about an inch of scum, of flesh, of boiled flesh, of burnt flesh.
The bunker that was attacked last night was a military target.
I knew my wife and my children. Is that fair? Nobody says something from this massacre.
When the missile fell on the upper floor, the doors were closed because of the pressure of the bombing. The people had nowhere to go out. Two cold water containers as well as two boilers exploded. As in the upper floor, people were burned to death. Here in the lower floor, people died in very high degree of boiling water. Here you can see the water level which flooded the lower floor. On the walls, you can see the remains of hair, of human flesh and some parts of the body. Just imagine the feeling of the people who were boiled to death. Each day at 4 o'clock, they had to close the doors so that no more people would be accepted. So at least there was 1,200 people there.
The Al-Fridis bunker hit gave us a major public relations and political problem. I mean, it stopped everything we were doing for about a day and a half.
We wondered momentarily if, in fact, there was some sort of a propaganda ploy.
The guy in the States told him, Are you sure that these bodies came from this bunker, or were they gathered from other places to be put here so that you would film them?
People told us that the British and the Americans were savages, animals, and criminals. This man said that 11 of his family were in the shelter.
People stopped using the shelters after what happened to Henri. Because what's the use?
If there's a demonstration in Iraq, to an awful lot of Iraqis as to how vulnerable they really are.
Did that incident have any effect on the conduct of the war?
At the risk of sounding heartless, no.
We'll bomb them till they're not there anymore.
Munitions factories are working overtime.
Saudi Arabia, we have
time. The United Nations gave the Allies the go-ahead to wage war. It is now powerless to stop it.
We have the entire United Nations behind us.
Officials give ear that public support for the war may not be
enough. There won't be any restrictions.
Destroying everything within a 500-yard radius.
We are not to record the fair measures.
Loaded with thousand-pound cluster bombs.
I think we need to get away from the final count.
Iranian radio reported shockwaves from across the Iraqi border,
suggested by Allied bombing armies serving rockets. There was no fear of retaliation.
There's a lot of stuff going in there, and it looks pretty messy on the ground.
You can see the missile piercing the roof and exploding against the back wall.
But there is at least 40-50 attacks in civil area. With heavy bombs also, and with small bombs they drop in thousands.
As soon as the planes land, 4,000-pound bombs are loaded by the ground crew.
That would not want to be an Iraqi crew up there. I think my biggest danger up there today was running into another American aircraft.
We'd be planning warfare on a huge scale.
More than 5,500 risk bombs.
This is very early days. Anyone would be worried if things going this smooth to
match up. The convoy of lorries carrying flowers and attacked by what looked like clusters.
Living down Vietnam with a vengeance.
The AWACS went first at the airborne control center. Then came the strike force behind the mother of the airborne tank.
1,700 Iraqis yesterday.
Air crews said only in daylight to be sure about what is wrong.
They're not trying to fight us right now. Now they're trying to hide from us.
Loading up the cluster bombs that explode above the ground, killing Iraqi troops in trench systems.
Air attacks aid the tankers on the highway. Far above, vehicles may look like transport carriers.
This manufacturer's video shows that a pilot will choose individual targets.
There's going to be massive air attacks on them in the weeks ahead. It is going to be unrelenting.
Apache gunships designed to destroy tank columns were hunting down individuals.
With regard to Saddam Hussein saying that he has met the best that the coalition has to offer, I would only say the best is yet to come.
Increasing pressure for a full United Nations Security Council debate on the Golden War, proposed by America.
What we've seen so far is pretty phenomenal. Can we really go up a notch?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Our strategy to go after this army is very, very simple. First, we're going to cut it off, and then we're going to kill it.
We have the power. We have the freedom. We have the intellect. We have the affluence. We can manifest our own destiny.
The period of even more intense devastation, which the Allies now plan.
A death-side view of the world's biggest gun.
Each shell weighs more than a ton.
The Allied bombing of Iraq remains relentless.
The United States has accused Iraq of war crimes.
To disbelieve the Pentagon
version.
20,000 prisoners have so far been taken.
The Allies argue Iraq needs to do more than simply comply with UN resolutions.
Even though Saddam Hussein has ordered his troops to withdraw from Kuwait, the president called that an outrage. Saddam is not withdrawing, he was retreating.
American airborne divisions and troops cut off the Republican Guard from any possibility.
They're not a part of the same human race that the rest of us are.
If they do withdraw against Iraq, they won't be attacked. We've made that perfectly clear.
Iraq offers to abandon claims on Kuwait. America says that's not good enough.
Continue to prosecute the war with undiminished intensity.
The men in the path of the Allied armor were hopelessly ill-equipped.
Soldiers are surrendering not just Allied forces. Here's a cameraman.
Their reward now, American chocolate bars.
quite frankly, the United Nations doesn't matter anymore. Somebody said to me a couple of hours ago that perhaps they should sell the building for the time being to the Japanese and they could turn it into a pizza parlor.
We know that our cause is moral. We know that our cause is right. Peace can only be established now by getting Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait.
They need to put some hate in their heart and go out and stop those son of a bitches from getting out of Kuwait.
We're not only willing to shoot and bomb people in the name of justice, but help them.
Iraqi forces are reported to be in full retreat
on the main routes being used by Iraqi troops to withdraw.
Withdraw, retreat. Let's settle for running away.
The bombing Iraqi troops have already suffered is minor compared to what they've got coming.
We're going to concentrate in the right.
Knock, knock. Coming at ya.
Surrender or face starvation and certain death.
Okay, stop the tape, please.
It's been a great victory. We needn't be shy about it. And if I've got one message for the people at home today, it's this. Get out there and ring your church bells.
God, we've kicked Vietnam syndrome once and for all.
Let me describe briefly what happened. There were 114,000 separate aerial sorties in 42 days. That's one every 30 seconds. 88,000 tons of bombs were dropped. Only 7% of the bombs that fell upon Iraq were guided. 93% were free-falling bombs that hit where chance, necessity, and no free will took them. There were 38 aircraft lost by the United States in this slaughter. That number is less than the number of accidental losses in war games where no live ammunition is even used. No enemy aircraft rose to meet them. We know that. And no enemy anti-aircraft could reach them. And those who were there at the time know that. The United States claims to have lost 148 people. It concedes that the majority were from accident and friendly fire. There was not a single U.S. tank penetrated by an Iraqi missile. There was not a single B-52 downed by enemy fire. We had planes fly from Barksdale, Louisiana, without ever touching the ground, and return to Barksdale, Louisiana, having killed thousands of people on the ground they never saw. And one of those facts that the enemy of truth was television telling us about the surgical strikes. And nobody gets hurt. We just turn the lights out. We use fuel-air explosives, and it incinerates people, and it crushes people. And we used it against civilians and military personnel. We had missiles fired from submarines in the eastern Mediterranean for sport, just to see how they worked. We had Tomahawk cruise missiles by the hundreds launched from the Persian Gulf, a couple of thousand miles from the places that they hit, totally out of range. We pulled a couple of old-fashioned battleships up there and dumped 2.1 million pounds of hot metal on southern Iraq around Basra and killing people with impunity. You remember General Kelly announced before the beginning of the so-called ground war. But there was no ground war. Name one battle. There wasn't a battle. There was a slaughter. General Kelly said when the troops finally moved forward, there are not many of them left alive to fight. And finally we learned that bulldozers and tanks with plows on the front came in and buried thousands, dead, wounded, and living. The Geneva Conventions, written in the blood of millions and millions of people who died in World War II. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States Army, when asked how many casualties he thought we had inflicted on Iraqi military and civilians, said frankly, "That's not a figure I'm very much interested in." 48 hours after the ceasefire, on the direct order of General Schwarzkopf, as we know, major assaults occurred that took thousands of more lives. We killed at least 125,000 soldiers. We've killed to date more than 130,000 civilians. We killed as many as we dared.
I believe that the United Nations has emerged from this with great authority. It will go down to history as being the first really successful operation of the United Nations.
The country they liberated, Kuwait, and the aggressor country, Iraq, are both tonight in a worsening state of chaos.
This is the first sight of the uprising that's raging inside Iraq. The lightly armed rebels can demonstrate defiance of Saddam Hussein, but their leaders accept they have little chance of toppling him unless they can get outside help.
I think the whole of sanctions should stay while Saddam Hussein is in power, because the Iraqi people have to have an incentive to stand up to him and get him out.
The opposition within the country, of course, listened to the West and rose against Saddam Hussein, only to be confronted by the United States in particular, helping Saddam Hussein against them. They actually stopped rebels from reaching arms depots. They flew over his helicopters as his helicopters attacked them. They gave his Republican Guard safe passage through their lines to attack the rebels. They did everything except join the fight on his side.
But if you're going to sustain cheap and plentiful supplies of oil, you've got to have a regime there to ensure that you can provide it.
A special United Nations envoy is warning that Iraq is facing a catastrophe unless food and fuel are allowed into the country.
You asked me to travel as a matter of urgency.
to Iraq. It should be said at once that nothing we had seen or read had prepared us for the devastation which has befallen the country. Most means of modern life have been destroyed. The authorities are as yet scarcely able to measure the dimensions of the calamity, much less respond to its consequences. The conflict has wrought near-apocalyptic results. Iraq has been relegated to a pre-industrial age.
You people didn't leave anything that you did not target your planes on it.
Everything was bombed. Schools, churches, mosques, roads, factories, farms, homes, everything.
And throughout day and night, the bombing continued.
Cats were frightened, and their noises with the planes, it was something very disturbing. It brought everything ugly to your imagination. And I think this is the real war.
To prevent future wars and to maintain American influence, many more arms must be sold to these countries in the years ahead.
When you're dealing with friends and allies, if you provide the equipment, you have a string on it, which means that you probably can contaminate their thinking with your values.
You people watched us. You people watched our country being demolished. You watched us in your living room through the gun sight cameras.
Without asking any question, where do these bombs fall?
Article 48 of the Geneva Convention states,
it is prohibited to attack, destroy, remove, or render useless objects indispensable to the survival of the civilian population. And this is precisely what was the target of many of our smart bombs. We must ask ourselves, did the war have to be fought in this way?
The same question was put to a Pentagon planner.
What were we trying to do with the sanctions? Help out the Iraqi people? No. What we were doing with the attacks on the infrastructure was to accelerate the effect of sanctions.
In April, new Security Council resolutions were tabled. A UN Special Commission, UNSCOM, was given unprecedented power to seek and destroy Iraq's weapons capability. Sanctions levied to force a withdrawal from Kuwait would now be used to ensure Iraq's compliance with UNSCOM.
Sanctions are now, in these new circumstances, a vital lever in making sure that Iraq complies with her international obligations.
The time has come to try to change the destructive pattern of military competition and proliferation in this region and to reduce arms flow.
But even as James Baker was speaking, elsewhere in the administration, very different plans were being laid. The post-war arms deal to the Gulf states worth between $50 and $150 billion.
We will also still be controlling the economic sanctions, and in particularly preventing the export of oil. In other words, Iraq cannot recover from this war with that situation.
I saw a baby with a big tummy and legs like sticks. His mouth was bleeding, his hair was falling. We're just shocked because we didn't saw such a thing before. We asked, what's this case? They said, this is a kwashiorkor.
Children who get to this stage of nutritional deprivation are found throughout all of Iraq and rarely survive.
Kwashiorkor had not been seen in Iraq for 3 decades. The Security Council removed foodstuffs from the list of embargoed items and established a sanctions committee to screen goods coming into Iraq. Food and medicine were now officially exempt, but...
How do you buy the food? How do you pay for it? If they freeze your assets and they don't permit you to export, where do you get the money to buy it? That's a fallacy. The West is playing on words.
The In July, a second UN envoy warned that without $7 billion of aid, Iraq faced massive starvation. The Security Council offered a single oil sale of $1.6 billion, of which two-thirds would be paid to Kuwait. The Iraqi government rejected the terms. It was, a Bush official said,
a good way to maintain the bulk of sanctions and not be on the wrong side of a potentially emotive issue.
By the end of the year, 100,000 civilians had died. In April 93, a showdown with UNSCOM led to new Allied bombing. Within months, UN inspectors had announced that their work was all over. But the Security Council now demanded long-term surveillance. Until that was in place, sanctions would stay. A UNICEF report detailed the consequences. Sanctions have led to a virtual collapse of healthcare, water supply, and sanitation. Politically motivated sanctions cannot be implemented in a way that spares the vulnerable. The report was shelved.
Sanctions against Iraq is affecting everybody in Iraq. It's affecting the Arabs as much as the Kurds. It's affecting the pro-Saddam forces, and it's affecting the anti-Saddam. It's affecting the pro-Western, it's affecting the anti-Western. There is no one exempted from the sanction. The sanctions are on the whole country.
The government ration now supplied only two-thirds of energy requirements and lacked vital nutrients. Malnutrition amongst children was widespread and lowered resistance to disease. Dysentery, cholera, and typhoid, eradicated before the war, were epidemic. With medical imports cut by 90%, Iraq's once high-tech health service was unable to cope.
If you see our hospitals, we are complaining of shortage in everything, and I mean it, everything.
Medical staff were forced to choose. Which child shall have medicine? Which child shall be left to die? An Iraqi doctor wrote,
for children with leukemia to begin treatment, families sell their belongings and even their homes, and after bringing in the drugs from Jordan, the children are dying from uncontrolled infection.
Two-thirds of children in a psychiatric survey did not believe they would survive to adulthood. They were trapped within their trauma and unable to escape. Time seems to have stopped.
I was just asking my little boy, he's 7 years old. He is scared every time he hears a noise. He thinks, well, where's the rocket? The kids really are shattered.
Children from poorer families were forced out of school to work or to beg.
What will they do in the future if a child of 13 or 14 years old leaves school now? What will become of him?
In July, the United Nations World Food Programme warned that 20 million Iraqis were now simply engaged in a struggle for survival. Yet the sanctions committee banned essential items on the grounds that they were dual use. Wheelchairs, because aluminium is used in aircraft wings. Angina tablets, because they contain nitroglycerin. Midwifery kits, because scissors might be melted down to make bullets. For lack of drugs, women bled to death after childbirth. Caesarean sections had to be endured without anesthetic. Many babies were born premature and underweight. Their mothers, too malnourished to breastfeed, had nothing to give them but sugar and tea. In September 1994, the government was forced to halve the ration as food stocks failed. 400,000 children were estimated to have died since the war, and future generations had been condemned to pay the highest price of all, the integrity of their DNA.
For the very first time in that war, the British and American military used a new and devastating weapon. It has left in its wake, on and around the battlefields, radioactive and highly toxic dust that lasts for over 4 billion years.
Depleted uranium rounds fired by the Allies had left over 300 tons of dust blowing across the sands with each new desert storm, into the water, into the food chain. The rise in cancer was unprecedented.
But is the position even worse than first fear, that the weapons we used may also be responsible for a new wave of birth defects?
Midwives have been coping with birth deformities they've never seen before.
To end the embargo, but Britain and America resisted. The US ambassador to the UN, Madeleine Albright, described sanctions as one of the most powerful weapons in our armory and was adamant that they should stay.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but the price, we think the price is worth it.
The US proposed the Oil for Food program. Iraq could sell $4 billion of oil a year. A third would be paid as compensation to Kuwait, the remainder used by the UN to buy humanitarian supplies. Russian and French diplomats dismissed the move as a public relations tool. In September, the World Food Program reported, "We are at the point of no return in Iraq. People have exhausted their ability to cope." In May 96, the regime accepted the terms of the Oil for Food Program. The Iraqi people waited 10 months for the first shipment to arrive. 125 tons of chickpeas. By April 97, of 2,000 applications submitted to the Sanctions Committee, only 284 had been approved. 40 contracts on the World Health Organization's priority list were blocked by the Americans, as were consignments of beans, cooking oil, and rice. In September 1998, the coordinator of the program, Dennis Halliday, resigned in protest.
The Oil for Food program, as conceived, is completely inadequate. It was designed, in fact, not to resolve the situation, but simply to prevent further deterioration of both the mortality rates and malnutrition. It has failed to do that. At best, it perhaps has just about sustained the situation. Sanctions do nothing but target civilians, innocent civilians. In fact, in the case of Iraq, it's targeting children, 40% of whom were not born when Kuwait was invaded.
There was worse to come. After 7 years of inspections, relations between the Iraqi administration and UNSCOM broke down.
This is not AIM and Commission. It has been turned into an American agency with the support of the British.
British and American planes readied to attack as the inspectors were pulled out of Baghdad. On December the 18th, Prime Minister Tony Blair stood in front of his Christmas tree to announce that the bombing had begun.
What do you want Iraqi children to think? How are they supposed to believe that friendship is possible with the world? Animals in the West are treated much better than him. The other day there was a child who said to me, I wish I was born a dog in America.
It was a four-day intensive aerial bombardment of selected targets inside Iraq. But where did the target information come from? The CIA ran an unauthorized eavesdropping operation against the Iraqis from UNSCOM's office in Baghdad, and information collected by the spies was used by the British and the Americans to pinpoint targets in the Desert Fox airstrikes on Iraq.
The bombing continued into the next century, as did sanctions.
The United States killed UNSCOM.
And without UNSCOM, the conditions for lifting the embargo could not be met. After 6 months in office, Dennis Halliday's replacement, Hans von Sponeck, was in despair.
Iraq now has an estimated national debt of $190 billion. Right now, we are setting the stage for depriving another generation of opportunity to become responsible national and international citizens of tomorrow.
And it's not a passive thing, it's not neglect, it's an active decision-making process of the member states of the Security Council. They know what they're doing.
They know we own their country. We dictate the way they live and talk. And that's what's great about America right now. Especially when there's all that oil out there we need.
In October, Secretary General Kofi Annan accused America of deliberately disrupting the oil for food program upon which millions of people depend for their survival. 4 months later, Hans von Sponeck resigned.
There is a much wider design here, where Iraq fits somewhere, but the experiment is over, and we should never apply this kind of thing to any other country again, because we have seen that this experiment fails, in human terms.
For nearly a decade, the United Nations agencies, dedicated to health, development, and the protection of children, had meticulously documented the results of the experiment. In the name of justice and international law, the governments of the Security Council had overseen the pitiless destruction of a nation without condemnation or outcry from their own citizens.
Here you are killing hundreds and hundreds of thousands, and nobody cares.
As if the world has built a Berlin Wall of silence all around Iraq.
One in four children were now slowly starving. Physically and intellectually stunted, these children will never recover.
Why? So that the multinationals could get our oil. We would have sold our oil anyway. It's useless to anybody to be kept in the land.
Others have already paid the price in full.
There's no other way to describe the death of one, possibly 1.5 million people, to describe the death of thousands of kids each month, to describe the death of probably 600,000 children since 1990. What else is that but genocide?
It's a war. It's malnutrition. It's lack of medicine. Why?
20 centuries after the birth of Christ, George Bush addressed US aircrews running bombing missions over Iraq.
I am delighted,
he told them,
that I've been invited out here today to salute you, who, in my view, are doing the Lord's work.
Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down.
The Sanction Committee
does not even respect the right of the dead to be buried according to the Islamic rules.
Therefore shall her plagues come in one day.
Because the UN Sanction Committee prohibited Iraq from importing shroud cloth.
Death and mourning and famine.
We say in our culture that the only belonging that you take with you when you die is a foreyard of a shroud.
And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee.
And that, the UN, is depriving our people. They want them to go up naked.
What else is that but genocide?
We think the price is worth it.
Depriving another generation.
We think the price is worth it.
And that's what's great about America right now.
We think the price is worth it.
They know what they're doing.
Doing the Lord's work.
We think the price is worth it.
And nobody cares. Why?
We think the price is worth it.
There is a much wider design here.
We think the price is worth it.
Depriving another generation.
We think the price is worth it.
What else is that but genocide?
We think the price is worth it.
Why?
They know what they're doing.
We think the price is worth it.
Doing the Lord's work.
We think the price is worth it.
Why?
We think the price is worth it.
And nobody cares.
We think the price is worth it.
Why?
We think the price is worth it.
Why?
That was The Fire This Time, produced by Grant Wakefield. For more information, you can visit them on the web at www.firethistime.org, firethistime.org.
The pledge to resist. We believe that as a people living in the United States, it is our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our names. Not in our name will you wage endless war. There can be no more deaths, no more transfusions of blood for oil. Not in our name will you invade countries, bomb civilians, kill more children, letting history take its course over the graves of the nameless. Not in our names will you erode the very freedoms you have claimed to fight for. Not by our hands will we supply weapons and funding for the annihilation of families on foreign soil. Not by our mouths will we let fear silence us. Not by our hearts will we allow whole peoples or countries to be deemed evil. Not by our will and not in our name. We pledge resistance. We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war or for their religion or ethnicity. We pledge to make common cause with the people of the world to bring about justice, freedom, and peace. Another world is possible, and we pledge to make it real.
that was the Not In Our Name Pledge of Resistance. A couple of upcoming events in Ithaca at Cornell. Angela Davis will be speaking Friday, November 8th at Sage Chapel at 8 p.m. Tickets for Angela Davis can be picked up at the Willard Strait Hall ticket office on the Cornell campus. There is no charge, so you better act now before they sell out. That's Friday, November 8th, Angela Davis, sponsored by the Cornell Public Service Center. And the day before that, on November 7th, Critical Perspectives on the War on Terror, a speaker series organized by the Cornell Forum for Justice and Peace, will be presenting Amiel Alkaleh, professor of comparative literature at Queens College, CUNY. The talk is titled Poetry, Politics, and Translation, American Isolation and the Middle East. That will be at 4:30 p.m., Thursday, November 7th, at the English Department Lounge, Goldwyn Smith Building, number 258, Cornell University. Among the topics scholar, poet, critic, translator, and activist Amiel Alkaleh will examine will be the relationship of culture to politics from the Cold War period to the present set of crises in the Middle East. Alkaleh will examine and discuss these and other questions in an open forum and read a section of his latest work, From the Warring Factions, a book-length poem dedicated to Srebrenica, site of the massacre of some 7,000 Bosnian Muslims in 1995.
If you have an event you'd like us to announce or an issue you'd like us to cover on the program, you can contact us at our website at www.radioforall.org/unwelcome. That's radio, the number 4, ALL.org/unwelcome. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Unwelcome Guests is produced by Chris Sturr, Jesse Lind, Lynn Gary, and Sean Ewald. We are solely responsible for its content.
You still catch me napping one day and they'll kill me. Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle will all